Good morning. It's 11 minutes before the hour on this Thursday, the 5th day of January, 2012. I'm Jeff Seifert for Raven News. The city of Cake will celebrate its 100th anniversary this weekend. As KCAW's Ed Ronco reports, the three-day festivities include reflections on not only the community's history, but also its culture.
Nearly 600 people live in Cake, which is on northwest Kuprinoff Island. On this particular Wednesday afternoon, Mayor Heinrich Kadaik Sr. is among those preparing for company.
Getting our food ready and making sure we got everything in place, make sure our guests all got a place to stay and everything else. We don't have really any idea how many people we might end up with extra.
Kadaik says the town is hoping for 100 visitors on this, the city's 100th birthday. Friday features a health and career fair along with an arts and crafts fair and an evening social.
They do all kinds of games and all the other stuff, and they have box social just like they have, you know, any other place. It's a suitcase thing and the balloon racing and passing the oranges and stuff like that, you know, that we used to do years ago.
The festivities are officially called the 100-Year Cake Day Celebration, but don't let the idea of a centennial fool you. Yes, Cake is celebrating its 100th anniversary, but the number only applies to city government, which was founded in 1912. In reality, the area around Cake has been home for Tlingit people for hundreds, perhaps thousands of years. Saturday afternoon is dedicated to Tlingit traditions. There will be presentations on speech-making, on protocols of death, on party planning, Tlingit naming, and finally, a potluck with traditional foods and dancing. And then, on Sunday, an evening ceremony honoring the past, celebrating the present, and looking to the future. Mayor Kadaik will be among those discussing the town's future. He's been mayor for 6 years and a Cake resident all his life.
All my life, 67 years.
Which constitutes more than two-thirds of the city's history.
In my lifetime, it changed a lot. We have blacked-out roads. We got a blacked-out airport. It just changed a whole lot. It's a whole lot different than it was when I started 67 years ago.
Make no mistake about it, there are some real issues on the horizon as the city attempts to attract hydropower and grow its infrastructure and retain its residents. We asked Kadaik what he thought they would be talking about when Cake celebrates its bicentennial.
I wish I could tell you that. I hope they'll be looking back and saying that, you know, that we in our era, we finally got cheap energy in our community where our people can afford to live here.
But the main thing, he hopes, is that people who visit have a good time celebrating Cake's anniversary and that those who stay after the party's been cleaned up have a place they can call home well beyond the century ahead.
The most important thing is my people. My people are really special for me, and I've been trying to work real hard to make sure our people are taken care of.
The 100-Year Cake Day celebration begins in Cake on Friday at 10 a.m. for the general public. The festivities end with a grand exit and the presentation of commemorative canoes at 8 p.m. Sunday. Reporting from Sitka, I'm Ed Ronco.
Alaska Ship and Dry Dock is building a commercial fishing vessel for the first time. The Ketchikan Shipyard has landed a contract with Petersburg's Alaska Longline Company to construct a new 136-foot factory longliner. Deanna Garrison reports.
The Alaska Longline Company operates fishing vessels in the Bering Sea and Gulf of Alaska, harvesting black cod, Pacific cod, and turbot. ASD Director of Shipyard Development Doug Ward says a shipbuilding contract with Alaska Longline Company was signed on Friday.
To build a brand new factory longliner, new fishing vessel that is, I think, partly influenced by recent changes to the American Fisheries Act that is allowing the Bering Sea fishing fleets to modernize and upgrade their fleets that where previously they were unable to add new capacity to those fishing vessels.
Ward would not disclose the price of the contract. The American Fisheries Act was modified in 2010 to allow vessel owners to replace or rebuild their fleets. ASD says rebuilding and replacement of Bering Sea fishing vessels is expected to occur over the next 10 to 20 years, providing hundreds of millions of dollars worth of shipbuilding and conversion work for West Coast shipyards.
The changes to the American Fisheries Act came about through the Coast Guard Reauthorization Act that went through a little over a year ago through Congress. And since then, there's been a lot of speculation on who would build the first vessel and what kind it was going to be. And there's probably four major fleets up in that ground fishing fleet. Looks like the longliners are making the first moves to replace vessels or modernize their vessels. For over a year now, there's even been a number of conferences down in Seattle about what the new regulations mean and how the industry is going to respond to that. So just at the close of 2011, we're seeing some of the fleets begin to take advantage of the ability to add new ships.
Alaska Ship and Dry Dock began building ships about 12 years ago. Since that time, the shipyard has constructed multiple ferries and an Exxon fuel barge. This will be the shipyard's first contract to construct a commercial fishing vessel. Ward says ASD is actively courting the Bering Sea fleet in hopes of attracting more ship construction and repair work to Ketchikan.
That's a fleet that we've really never had the capacity to build modern steel vessels in the state of Alaska. So those fleets have always turned to yards in the Pacific Northwest. There's some top-notch shipyards that have built the majority of the new vessels for the Bering Sea fishing fleet. They're good yards. They're extremely competitive. And to be able to compete in that market and actually land one of the projects early in this fleet rebuild program that's going on is a great opportunity for Alaska Ship and Dry Dock and for Ketchikan, too.
In a joint press release with ASD, Alaska Long Line Company President and Managing Owner John Winther said he is pleased that ASD got the contract to build the new vessel. He says he's watched ASD develop into a first-class company with the skills necessary to perform vessel repair and construction of the highest quality. The new longliner is scheduled to be completed next year. In Ketchikan, I'm Deanna Garrison.
Southeast Alaskans with ancestral roots in the region are getting a chance to help dig them up in a new program that trains residents about modern archaeology practices. Last month, a team of professional scientists and students completed a dig at a historic site halfway between Haines and Klukwan. From Haines, Tara Bicknell has the story.
Let's say around 100 years from now, archaeologists are digging around the Lynn Canal and uncover the remnants of your house. What story would they tell about you and the way you lived? Archaeologist Anastasia Wiley and a team of local researchers spent the past season doing just that for Gus Claney.
He was the father of many of the Hotches. Much of the Hotch line all came from Gus Claney.
And he kept a hunting cabin at 13 Mile on the Haines Highway in the 1930s.
13 Mile had was it had a wooden cabin that was collapsed and 35 pits.
Pits for storing food. The team of local researchers also found his outhouse and his bathhouse, made of wood that was hand-hewn or made out with a saw.
So it was really interesting. He was an interesting person.
Interesting to an archaeologist, sure, but also to some of the researchers who were working with Wiley at 13 Mile.
My name is Marcia Hotch.
The dig was also an opportunity for descendants of Claney and members of his clan like Klukwan's Marcia Hotch to learn about modern archaeology. The Native Archaeological Training Program, which Wiley is modeled after similar programs in California, brought in eight people from Haines Chilkoot Indian Association and Klukwan's Chokat Indian Village.
I think my favorite part, my most favorite part about it, was when we were looking at the different types of pits, and we went and looked at up in the Chilkoot area, and she took us into the forest. So there we were standing next to this huge square, a hole in a pit in the ground. But if I was in there just picking berries or just tromping around, I would have just walked over them. But as I was in there, it was just like, and then I saw another square, and then another one, and I'm like, oh my goodness, my hair just...
Besides the professional workers, each of the eight students, like Marcia, attended class during the day and completed research in the field through the week and weekend. The team used artifacts like a jar that used to hold Libby's dill pickles and a Maxwell House coffee can to date the occupation of the site. The information compiled on the site also includes oral interviews with area residents who have memories from when the camp was up and running. Locals like Cluckwan's Evelyn Hotch.
She was the great-granddaughter of Gus Claney, and she, when she was 5 years old, she went to this cabin, so she could tell us all about it. It was a winter trapping cabin, and the reason those pits are there, this is really interesting. This man, Gus Claney, he was, when he was 5 years old, his sister got married to a white man, and they took him to Dawson City, and they taught him English. Well, this is back at the turn of the century, 1900, 1905. So when he came back as a teenager, he was one of the few people, if not the only person, native person, that could speak English. So when the Port Chilkoot soldiers were here, they all used him as the guide and everything because they could talk to him, and he could get together crews for them and all that kind of thing.
The bulk of the documentation on the story at 13 Mile is done, and the project is on its way to public review. But the opportunity for locals to learn modern technology continues. Another class offering credit through University of Alaska Southeast is beginning for locals, such as the descendants of those people who once handled the artifacts. 10 people are already signed up for the next session in the spring. In Haines, I'm Tara Bicknell.
The chief executives of the Big Three North Slope energy producers are expected to meet with Governor Sean Parnell today. This comes 3 months after Parnell proposed a meeting, saying it's time that the major North Slope players, including the state, work collectively to determine the shape of the next generation of North Slope resource development. Parnell in October said he wants the companies to unite behind a natural gas pipeline project that would allow liquefied natural gas to be shipped overseas if the market truly has shifted from the lower 48. That's it for Raven News for this hour. You're listening to KCAW Sitka. It's 1 minute past the hour. Good morning.